Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd,
Thomas. You were a little bit early on the downbeat there.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even planning it to.
You were like
the beat drop, to be honest.
You were like the overzealous person
in the jam session.
Well, I was gonna say the rave. just like oh yeah, buddy. Wait for the beat to drop.
We are live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
I hope Manny's not already.
I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah, he is. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. As mentioned, now joining us here on the show, he is the coach of the Vancouver Giants, Manny Viveros. Manny, thank you as always for making time for us today. How are you?
I'm doing fine, guys. How you guys doing?
We're doing really well, and lots to get into with the Giants right now. It was, of course, the top prospects game in the CHL last night. Colton Roberts there representing the Giants. Picked up a couple assists as well, and, you know, Colton Roberts, big frame. Obviously, when you see a guy with his physical tools, you know that's going to turn the eyes of scouts. But beyond that, what is it that makes him such an intriguing prospect?
Well, we certainly weren't surprised of how he played last night. He's been doing that for us all year. But to see him do it, his age group of the best prospects in the CHL was just what a real nice, kind of a cap to what he's been doing so far this year. But, Colton, like last night, for instance, what really impressed me is one thing he's been working on since last year, and then you can really see him pay the dividends right now is just skating, and against obviously the best prospects at his age group in the league, he did a really good job as far as his lateral movement and getting up ice and that, and that's something that was really impressive to watch.
How much of it, because as you mentioned, he's 17 and playing a really significant role for your team on the blue line. Just how difficult is it to do that at that age in the WHL, and how much of a learning experience has it been for Colton Roberts this year?
Well, in fairness to him, we put him in situations at times where a lot more difficult for him, to handle here. He's been playing a lot of minutes for our group in all different situations, and almost to a point where sometimes we probably overplay him in situations, though. But he's handled it well. He's got the physique and the conditioning to handle that. And it's all a good learning experience for him as far as being able to manage his ice when he's out there. And, he's one of those kids that really thrive on heavy minutes, and he's learning his trade, as we go along here. And it's not the offensive part, which has been really impressive this year, but more importantly, is the details that he's working on as far as learning how to defend first. And that's the first and foremost at that next level, especially for these young defensemen, is that being able to defend at the next level here. And he's just getting better and better as the year goes on.
Manny, I want to ask you about Mazden Leslie, who's picked it up offensively over the course of a recent six-game point streak. What's been playing into his individual success and how it's worked within your team concept?
Well, I think same with Robbie is the fact that Maz, he's defending so much better. Mm. Obviously, I wasn't here last year, though, but that's something that one of the things that Adam Magdal had challenged him this year is to get better in his own defense, his own coverage, defend first, and then the offense will come. And that's one of the things that he's really, really concentrated on this year, too. And he's been one of our, if not one of our best defensemen all season long. But his defensive games have improved tremendously. And that's something, a young kid like that is kind of flown under the radar. But he's getting better and better, too. So it won't be long before teams will start calling about this young man also, too, here. But he's really bought in and knew what he had to improve on if he ever wants to get an opportunity to play at the next level, and he's certainly done it.
Manny, I'm curious just to ask you big picture, whether it was in Henderson or with Swifty or with Spokane in the WHL, your teams have typically had a reputation for playing pretty high tempo, high octane, offensive hockey. When you come into sort of the first year of a project, how long does it take? How much work is required before that system becomes instinctive for a group of young men?
Well, it certainly has taken that time, and we've always said that from the very beginning. This is going to take our time, especially with the young group that we've had on our team here. It's going to take time to get used to, first of all, you know, the rigors of the Western Hockey League of playing on back-to-back nights and sometimes, you know, three nights in a row.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, our identity of what we want to play like, it certainly does take time. It even takes even more than a season for the kids that are here to really to absorb and understand the concept here. And then certainly we've added, since the trade deadline, two very skilled players in a very crucial position, at the centerman position, that helped our club tremendously too. So that also helps also in the type of game that we want to play. And, you know, certainly having those, their experience and their skill set makes a difference with our team, where we're able to possibly hang on to pucks more than just dump and chase and try to get after it off the forecheck. We're able to make plays through the neutral zone now with our skill set, and also has made a huge difference on our power play.
You know, you mentioned the young group you have this year, Manny, and one of those guys who's producing at a young age, just turned 17, in fact, Cameron Schmidt. And I know, you know, he had a couple goals on Sunday, helped you guys beat Kelowna, 9 points in his last nine games. What have you seen progress in his game over the course of his rookie WHL season?
Well, first of all, for Cameron, like, his play with the puck as far as offensively is dynamic. He can do things on his own and create space and opportunities just by himself here. But, you know, not just Cameron, but all these young players that I have in the Western Hockey League here, I kind of, you know, compare them. So we want to coach you to get to that next level here. And one of the things that I saw when I was in the American Hockey League and also at the National Hockey League level is the biggest difference between players from coming from college in the Western League or the CHL moving on towards the next level is that they play without the puck. And that's the biggest thing, that if these kids at this age can understand, you know, how important it is to play without the puck. There was a quote the other day I read. It was really impressive. You're spending 25% of the time your team having the puck. 25% of the other team is with the puck, and then you're spending 50% of the time just trying to get the puck in puck battles. And that's something that we're trying to teach these kids, how important the value of, when you're not having a puck, where you should be in the positions, and just by positioning and being in the right spots at times is going to help you throughout your whole game here. And if these young guys at this young age can master that at a young age, if they ever get to that next level here, it's going to make them that much more of a complete player.
Speaking of guys trying to get to that next level, Tyler Thorpe, another goal on Sunday, gives him 21 on the season. He's on a bit of a points tear recently as well. Was ranked 110th amongst North American skaters by Central Scouting in January. Is he playing some of his best hockey of the season right now?
No, he certainly is. You got to think with Tyler here that he's still basically a rookie. So he basically come to this team basically at this time last year. And the progression that he's made over that calendar year, more importantly, his conditioning-wise, he came back in an incredible condition this year, and he's kept us up this year throughout the whole year like that. He's a big body who's got, I call him that next-level type of wrist shot. And his skating ability is a lot better than what people think. Sometimes you get misled about depending on how big these young kids are, like they don't move as well, but he moves really well. And when he's moving his feet, he's really, really effective here. So here's a young man that I can't wait to see where he's going to be in 2-3 years from now. He's just learning, you know, what it is that to be at this high level here. And he's exceeded all expectations from everybody so far.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you know, 6'4", already up over 200 pounds at 18 years old. And, you know, he goes from 6 points in 48 games last year, now 37 through 44. You know, sometimes with these taller players and the bigger bodies, do we kind of underrate that maybe it just takes them a little bit longer for things to click? But then once they do, you know, in Tyler Thorpe's case here, you can really, once the total package comes together, the results can be pretty spectacular.
I certainly agree. And the biggest thing with Thorpe is his hockey IQ. He's a very smart young man. He understands the game. He plays in all situations for us. So he's one of those players where you have to tell him once and you don't have to tell him, you know, two times or three times over again. He gets it right away, too. So that certainly helped his development also.
You guys hosting the Victoria Royals tomorrow, first of three consecutive games against the Royals. The other two will be on the island. I mean, what's it like playing these three-game sets, and what do you guys have to do to make sure you're successful against the Royals here?
Well, I actually love it. I think it's a great little mini playoff series here, best of three, at a, you know, a very crucial time of year for us here, too. We're, you know, trying to nip at their heels in the standings here and kind of solidify ourselves solidify ourselves in a playoff position here too. So they've had an outstanding season as far as I'm concerned. They've been, you know, they look at their team and how they've been playing throughout the year. There's at times they're as good as anybody in our division here. So we've got to play, you know, our best. And, you know, if we play through our capabilities and how we play is our style, we're going to have a real good chance to, you know, to maybe get a couple wins this weekend here. But it certainly is a really important three-game set for us.
Manny, really appreciate the time and getting us up to date with everything going on with the Giants. Best of luck this weekend and for the rest of the year.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much.
That is Manny Viveros, head coach of the Vancouver Giants, weighing in on a lot of things going on with the team and some really interesting prospects on the Giants. I mean, I remember at the draft last year, or this most recent draft coming out of it, and both of us saying, how on earth did Mazden Leslie not get selected in that draft with him offensive profile? And you hear from Manny there talking about the way he's playing away from the puck and his defensive improvement. He's going to get that NHL opportunity at some point. And, you know, Tyler Thorpe is another one. This guy's 6'4", over 200 pounds, you know, not too far shy of a point per game in the WHL. Ranked 110th in North America only by Central Scouting. Like, you got to think that's a climber going into the draft. 6'4" and legitimate production in the dub. Yeah, you're going to be hearing your name called on draft day for sure.
Yeah, and given the age of this team too, you know, you'd expect them to look very different over the latter stages of the season than they have to this point. Especially, you know, young side, new coach, right? You're going to learn a lot about what this team can be and sort of what style of play to expect going forward over the balance of this campaign. Should be fun.
I thought it was interesting too, just Manny talking about, because of course he has the AHL experience as well, and then lots of Western League experience, and I think we always forget how hard that jump specifically is, the jump from junior, not just to the NHL, but to the AHL, right? And how often do we see guys lighting it up in junior, and then all of a sudden you go to the AHL and it's just so hard to produce and stay in the lineup. And I think his experience in both worlds probably puts him in a really good situation to help players have the best chance of success in that transition. All right, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strand, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as promised, we do have an update on the lineup situation at practice, courtesy of our own Brendan Batchelor. No changes up front, so Pettersson remains with Mikheyev and Kuzmenko. Suter stays with Miller and Besser. The bottom six remains the same. Only one change is on the blue line. Hughes and Hronek still together. Ian Cole and Tyler Myers skating together as a pair. Nikita Zadorov and Noah Juulsen on the third pairing together. So we saw Zadorov get benched in the third period after that Toropchenko goal, where he doesn't do enough to prevent the scoring chance on the goal in front of the net. Now he gets bumped down to the third pair. And look, I don't think this is anything to be concerned about, right? Like, oh, is Zadorov losing the faith of the coaching staff or anything like that? They've got a bunch of good defensemen that they trust and that they like and who are playing good hockey and who have given them good minutes this year. And, you know, one of Cole, Myers, or Zadorov is going to line up on the third pair. That's how it is right now with this team. And it's going to rotate. Sometimes it's going to be one guy. Sometimes it's going to be another. I don't think it's a cause for too much concern or panic about where Zadorov's game is, that he gets the demotion after last night.
No, but, you know, this team, Zadorov's good, like really good. And I do think this team needs Zadorov. You know, I agree with you. No need to overreact. Guys, the fact is that the minutes outside of the Hughes-Hronek pair are pretty evenly distributed, right?
Like, yes.
From a deployment perspective, you know, I think you could say that the Canucks don't necessarily have a second pair so much as they have kind of like two and a halves, right? Or maybe the politer way to say it is they don't really have a third pair. They kind of have two and a half pairs. And, you know, that's a good way to be. I think that helps keep the minutes relatively evenly distributed, right? And yeah, so no, there's no cause to overreact or anything. One thing that, you know, I liked Zadorov-Cole a fair bit as a pair. And I guess it's a little hard to go to, given the
handedness. Without Carson Soucy. Yeah. Then you'd be going Juulsen-Myers, and then, or you split up Hughes and Hronek, I guess. But then are you doing, you know, you're still ending up with two right shot guys on the pair and two left shot guys and another pair. And we know how little Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote like doing that, right? But I do agree that when Soucy is back, that's probably the look we see again, right?
Yeah.
At some point is Cole and Zadorov and Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers. I mean, those combinations were playing really well together. Like that, I don't think it's a coincidence at all that having all four of those guys in the lineup together probably lines up with their best defensive performances of the season.
No.
Right? It gives them such an identity with the size and the length and the mobility of a lot of those players as well. It really gives them that baseline defensive stability on the back end.
Yeah, I also liked Zadorov Myers when they were going to that for a stretch. You know, what's been sort of interesting over the course of the past month, especially once Soucy came back into the lineup, is there did begin to be a bit of stratification within that, you know, those two second and a half pairs with Tyler Myers kind of emerging as this team's three.
Tyler, we've talked about this, but it's worth reiterating. Tyler Myers is having a great season.
Yeah.
He's been really, really good for this team. Like, there's just no way around it. He's been awesome. And he's playing, as you said, he's essentially their number three defenseman.
Yeah. Well, especially over the course of, like, you know, the last month of games, they've been, you know, Myers' usage is ticking up, including that stretch where he was playing with Zadorov, where they were, like, regularly handling toughs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll see. Like, the thing with Myers' usage is he's been playing great, without question. But you got to keep his usage in that zone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, if it gets a little high, I think you start to see the seams, which is what we were talking about earlier in the year.
Yep.
When I was defending him after that first road trip, right? So, you know, that'll be an interesting thing to track here. And again, another storyline that I'm going to be monitoring, especially after what we saw last night. One of the few like meaningful hockey takeaways to me is how much does this team miss Soucy? That to me is of legitimate interest.
Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texts in Zadorov taking a lot of heat for one play, but Tocchet holding players accountable, which is what we expect. This is a good point, I think. He says, and so nice to actually have the depth to be able to hold players accountable. That is a key point, right? It's not just the willingness of the coach to do it and the buy-in. You also have to have, at a certain point, you have to have viable options to step up in the lineup, right? It's a lot different promoting somebody who's been or demoting somebody who's been pretty good for you to the third pair when you can move up Ian Cole or Tyler Myers, as opposed to, you know, moving up somebody who was kind of an AHL fringe guy in the past, right? So I think that's a good text in for Mike, is that the depth facilitates the ability to hold players accountable, right? You have Pew Suter, who can move around the lineup if somebody's demoted. You know, we always talk about that internal competition, and I think sometimes we focus on it at training camp, right? Oh, our guy's going to push for a spot. But when you have the depth that the Canucks have up and down the lineup, I think it factors in during the season as well, right? Because, hey, the coach has options. If I'm not getting it done, it's not like he has to give me these minutes because he has legitimate options elsewhere on the roster.
Yeah, the old internal competition.
It matters.
It does matter. No question.
There's no doubt about it. Like, I guarantee you Zadorov is, hey, I want to get back up in the lineup, right?
It matters when it's real. The problem is that everyone says it. So it's hard to tell.
And it's rarely real.
Yeah, it's hard to tell when it's real and when it's not.
Well, that's the thing, is like you can't create it out of nothing. The conditions have to be right. If there's a huge gap between your best, you know what I mean? Between like your middle of the roster players and your bottom of the roster players, what's the coach going to do?
Like, I've interviewed too many executives who are like, well, this year we're going to have internal competition. And then you get to like February and it's like
the same guys,
you know, Derek Pouliot's their third most used defenseman.
Louis Eriksson is playing with Bo Horvat.
So
and out there killing games.
It's like, it's easy to be cynical about, but you're right. When it matters, it matters.
Yeah. And when you put yourself in a position where you can actually do it, right? It's like this, I don't know, it's so many things when we talk about culture and accountability and all that, there's a chicken and the egg thing, right? Like, yes, those things help you win, but having a talent, winning already, it helps you establish those other things.
Right. Well, and no team looks like they have good culture
when they're losing. No.
You know, like, do the Kings really have a culture problem, or are they shooting 6% and getting 900 goaltending for a month?
Yeah. And the interesting thing, I think, is that
the Oilers looked broken.
I think the Kings might develop a culture problem because they're all ticked off about losing, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think it can, even if it's the breaks, bad breaks going against you causing it, I think you can get so, like, losing is just sucks so much for these competitive guys that it can cause the situation to go south.
You need to be able to stick to your guns. You need to have the confidence to stick to your guns. You can't start blaming people. You know, one thing that I think has happened to this team in the past, when the Canucks, for example, have struggled, right? You have guys trying to do too much, compounding the issue. You know, and by the way, like, one thing I'm curious to see as we go through the season, you know, like, for example, there's sort of a soft call that ends the game, or a soft non-call that kind of ends the game. Contentious non-call, let's put it that way.
Sure.
That sort of ends the game last night. What if it happens again against Columbus, right? You have another dubious whistle that costs the team. And then what if it happens again in Carolina?
Yeah.
Okay? Now there's frustration. Three-game losing streak. Maybe the Canucks get 2 points out of three games. What do they look like the next night in Boston? What do they – like – we haven't really seen this team have to go in a foxhole and figure it out when things are tough. But we have seen this core group struggle to arrest a fall. You know what I mean? Like, this is one thing that I genuinely, like, because we're raising the bar and talking about this team in a different way, you know, if you're going to win the cup, you're going to have to come back from like a 2-1 series deficit, maybe a 3-1 series deficit. You're going to have bad moments and have to come together and sort of keep it together, keep it on the level. You know, we've seen this team get hot and sustain. What we've struggled to see is this team have bad breaks and stay afloat. And we still haven't seen that over the course of this season, right? It's just one thing out there, one other test that I'd love to see them pass before the playoffs begin.
The interesting thing, though, is I think it's going to be hard to pass that test because they've had such a good season. Like, even if you lose four in a row, that's not panic time.
No.
You know what I mean? So, like, the bar for what would count as adversity at this point has also raised.
You're right.
Like, it's not – if they were struggling for the playoffs and you lose four in a row, then you're like, oh, boy, we really have to dig deep. Right now, it's like, okay, yeah, and we're still winning the division.
You know what, though? Like, end of the day, losing is so painful in the NHL that a three-game losing streak or a stretch of 10 games shooting 5% or, you know, or an injury to one key guy for 2 weeks, all of that will suffice to test it. You know what I mean? Like, all of that will suffice to test it in my mind. Even if you're right, you don't get to the point of it being like that life or death.
It's not going to be like a 5
season
alarm
on the line.
Like, oh boy.
Type test. I don't think it needs to. We don't need to see like red flashing lights and like an alarm sound necessarily for that to be tested, for this team to sort of demonstrate some of that more meaningful resilience than like the in-game resilience of, well, we fell behind 3-0 or we went ahead 3-0 and the Leafs came back
and
tied
it, or
whatever.
We'll take a break here. Keep your texts coming in. Sean Gentile, our guy from The Athletic, joins us next. We'll go around the league with Sean right here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us on the phone from The Athletic, one of our favorites here on the show. He is Sean Gentile. Sean, what's going on, man?
Some very chill playing music you guys have. Yeah. I'm in a state of pure relaxation after hearing that.
We spend an inordinate amount of time discussing our intro music on this show. We had a big like revamp. We have a big revamp of the music going into the season to make it more chill. And so I'm glad it's working.
We tried Rights Free Bob Marley the other day, and it was like orchestral. It had like organs. Didn't work out.
Oh man, I wonder if we're gonna get any Rights Free Bob Marley in the Bob Marley doc or the Bob Marley biopic coming out. which I've seen trailers for this movie in theaters for the last like 9 months. I think I saw one when I went to see Oppenheimer, and it's finally coming out. So I'm wondering if we're gonna get some fake music in that one too.
That's always a bad sign for a music biopic when you don't get the rights to the legendary music of the artist in question. Go ahead.
The Jackie Jordan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, 30
year olds, like back in the day. Yeah, same principle.
See, I think it's a good thing though, in that movies about art, the problem with them generally, right, is like, with the exception of The Wonders from That Thing You Do.
Sure.
Whatever song there is, like, and this hit captured the imagination
of
the world.
A social phenomenon is like not good. Yeah.
Or like, this painting changed how we saw painting. It's just like, okay. It's kind of the crummy.
It just reminds you, and then when you see like an actor, whatever, like an actor who kind of looks like an artist performing something, it just reminds you that it's not, in fact, the actual artist. Like,
right.
when you hear the song, it's just like, it's just like a reminder that it isn't, in fact, them. Yeah, it's just a mind.
The worst example of that phenomenon was, speaking of 30 Rock, the worst SNL show, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, the Aaron Sorkin one, where it was supposed to be like this like nation gripping comedy show. Like, oh my gosh, everyone is watching and talking about these comedy sketches every weekend.
Uh-huh.
And then they showed them, and it was like,
terrible.
Whoa, these are so bad.
This isn't funny at all.
No.
This is worse than actual SNL. What are the odds?
I mean, every Aaron Sorkin show though is like that, like The Newsroom.
Yeah.
No. We can just, if we just want to turn this into like 20 minutes of bashing the Newsroom, like, I'm game. Like, we can roll like that.
We'll do that, like, for we'll set up like a VIP tier or something. We'll do a bonus bonus hit with Gentile
Patreon
in the Newsroom.
Yeah.
All right,
let's talk hockey.
We'll get it on hockey though for now. I think biggest story coming out of the games, at least yesterday. Obviously, there's a really bad news story going on around the NHL right now as well. But from the games on the ice, the Kings lose to the Sabres last night. They've been in a free fall for a while here. Drew Doughty with some very pointed commentary after the game about some of his teammates and where their priorities lie. What do you make of what's going on with the LA Kings right now?
I feel like it happened just when everyone kind of internalized that they were a pretty good team. Like, it felt like they sold a bunch of people on themselves, like, sometime in, like, early December. I know I felt the way about them, at least. So I was like, all right, that's fine. They're legit. Yeah, Cam Talbot, like, it's a lot of it's built around him and how good can he be long-term. But you're like, yeah, there's, you know, got a lot of forward depth. They're pretty solid defensively. Like, that's a good hockey team. And now it's, like, a month later, and it's just been total crash and burn catastrophe, right? Because the goaltending regressed, and it seems like McClellan's under the gun, and now their top players, guys like Fiala, certainly Pierre-Luc Dubois, the guys who are, you know, in the top six there, who they're paying legit money to, a lot of those guys have gone cold, and now you got Doughty, turning the fire hose on those dudes last night. It's not a good situation, and I think for a team, you know, whose season started out pretty promisingly and looked like a lot of their stuff is pretty sustainable, it's got to be at least something of a surprising move.
Sean, over the course of the past month, 6% on ice shooting for the Kings, 900 goaltending, and yet, I sometimes worry with a team that's like still elite from an underlying profile, if something still needs to change, just to snap them out of it. Kind of what we saw with the Oilers. Like, I think Woodcroft's a good coach, but they needed to make a change just to get out of it. Are we there? Are we there with the Kings?
I wonder if do like the full Woodcroft and fire McClellan and just hope that all of a sudden from then on, you know, you get top five or top 10 goaltending in the league. I don't know. But that's true of the Oilers too. Like, it wasn't just the goaltending. It wasn't just bad luck. I think there was some system stuff, some underlying stuff there that went bad on Woodcroft as well. So yeah, I don't know. It seems like we're getting that way, right? Because bad luck's one thing, and bad goaltending or run of bad goaltending's one thing. But when you have dudes like Drew Doughty who come out after a game and just torch, you know, the majority of the lineup, that's when you start thinking, all right, is it time to hit the big red button on the coach? Like, absolutely. Because there, I mean, the other thing too is just with them on a longer term thing. Yeah. A lot of the underlying stuff is still pretty good, but if they want to get, if they're going to get where they want to go, if they're going to put this together, you know, the kind of rebuild job that they've done over the last few years, they need to get Pierre-Luc Dubois producing. Like, it, yeah. Like their whole thing doesn't work if that dude isn't at least a passable first line center, and he's been horrendous. So I think maybe if you start asking the question about McClellan, like, is he the guy that can get that out of them? Because they don't have, they have a lot of good offensive pieces, but they don't have a ton of great ones. And if you see those guys, like, even outside of just bad luck and bad shooting percentage, if you see them start to slide, you got to start asking the question, right? Because they don't have supreme talent up front, at least on the level of a contender. So I think when you have a roster like that, I think coaching gets even more important. And I think you start asking some tough questions for sure about the future of McClellan there, whether he signed an extension after last season or not.
One of the things that Durant and I have been talking about, especially this month when the Canucks are on a 10-game point streak right now, they're playing really well and kind of solidifying their status as a contender. And, you know, as we talk about, okay, how much should they push their chips in? Again, one thing we've mentioned is, you know, the field seems pretty wide open for the Stanley Cup this year. There doesn't seem to be one or two prohibitive favorites like there have been. Now, I do wonder if Edmonton going on a 14-game winning streak is changing that math a little bit, and maybe they'll be prohibitive favorites. But do you kind of see the lay of the land the same way?
I mean, it's easy to look at the Oilers and say they're on the road to being a prohibitive favorite. But again, what if, like, we saw it from Stu Skinner at the start of the season?
Yeah.
What if he goes in the tank and turns into an 890 goaltender again? Then all of a sudden, guess what? The Oilers aren't going to be anybody's favorites anymore. Like, that's just kind of the way she goes. So I'm with you, man. I'm with you in the West, and I'm with you in the East as well, where we've seen, you know, the Rangers take a little bit of a step back over the last month. And, you know, Boston, you know, do they have the big guns beyond Pasternak up front? Like, there's a lot of good teams, but not a lot of great ones. And I think that bodes well, certainly for Vancouver, but any team like that that's looking to level up, I think, over the course of the season and really put themselves in a good spot moving into the playoffs, I think that's good news for the middle class, because, you know, there's 12, 14, 16 teams who you could conceivably say, who you can realistically imagine going on a pretty long run. Yeah, and none who's running away with it. So yeah, it's interesting.
Good news for the middle class in the year of our Lord 2024. My God.
Could you imagine that? My goodness.
I want to talk about the Rangers really quick, because I've had like a multi-year fade position on this team in some ways. And yet I was thinking about them last night, talking to some folks about them. And one thing about the Rangers is that Igor Shesterkin hasn't shown up as Igor Shesterkin yet. And they're one of the best teams in the league. And that actually scares me from a perspective of, wow, could this team have real ceiling if he turns it on at some point? Because he's going to. He's Igor Shesterkin.
Is he?
Yes.
Like, are we sure of this?
I'm sure, like, of this.
It's the end of January. Like, I think he's great, obviously. I'm not, you know, by the time it's all said and done 10 years from now, we're going to look back on Igor Shesterkin's career and probably be pretty impressed by it. But goalies are weird, man. Sometimes, you know, you look back at a lot of good goaltenders, they have seasons where it's like, what happened there? Like, is it just a weird blip on the radar where they're average? And I don't know that I would bet on that happening with Shesterkin this year, but I've had that thought about him several times over the last month, let's say, or month or 6 weeks. Like, I think the odds are that the real Igor Shesterkin shows up, but I think we're past the point where we can just assume that happens. Now, if that dude plays like he did 2 years ago, then yeah, the Rangers are like, good luck with him. But I mean, we haven't seen it. He's been average.
We have to tier something since we've got you on. And I'd prefer not to tier good things for the middle class.
short yeah, segment.
It's gonna be. I'll hang up after about 10 seconds. It'll be a short conversation.
So I was thinking about this. I'm gonna give you the list of the top 10 Norris contenders, based on the gambling futures, the gambling market. Okay, so we're not gonna like look at the scoring stats, although you know, honestly, if they just reflected. if this market just reflected
guess
the top 10 NHL
pretty closely
scores,
yeah.
That they probably couldn't do worse. But I'm going to have you tier the contenders for the Norris Trophy from Quinn Hughes to whomever you put 10th. So we got Hughes, Makar, Bouchard, Dobson, Hedman, Morrissey, McAvoy, Fox, Darlene, Hronek. Yeah, that's the top 10.
I'm trying to break that up and like mix up the order so it's not just the exact gambling futures.
Right.
I think Quinn's by himself at this point. Like, yeah. I'll put him as like the odds-on favorite and not throw Makar in there. Like,
yeah,
like
clear favorite tier, Quinn Hughes. Tier of one.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he's the. I saw yesterday. I can't remember who tweeted, but he's the eighth fastest defenseman in league history to get to 400 points. I think he hit that one last night.
Yeah, it was 300. Like, but yeah, eighth fastest. 300. I mean, he's ridiculous, man.
He's nuts. He's nuts, and at this point, I think it would be a surprise if anybody else did it. Like, whatever. I know you got to account for health and all that sort of stuff, but over the last month, as his production is, you know, he's continued just killing it. Makar was banged up a little bit. He's had some bouts of ineffectiveness. I think Quinn's by himself. And then I also think Makar is probably alone in tier two. Like it's legitimately tough for me to imagine anybody else finishing in second place. I think after that, that's where stuff gets interesting.
Right. So. Tier two, though, we're going to call it, like, not his year, but still the dude tier. Cale Makar.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then everyone else? Do you have, like...
So, read the order again after that. It was
Bouchard first. Dobson, Hedman, Morrissey, McAvoy, Fox, Darlene, Hronek.
I would move Morrissey up with the defensive season.
I think Morrissey goes up.
The defensive season the Jets are having.
Yeah.
Because of how good that team has been. And because, I mean, Hellebuck excluded, I think outside of, you know, if you're talking about the skaters, I think whenever teams have really good seasons, you want to try to, there's a natural compulsion to come up from a narrative standpoint, like here's the guys, to reward the guys that are making it happen. And sometimes that, you know, leads to maybe getting more votes than they would otherwise. So Bouchard's been great, big part of why Edmonton has gone on this run. But I'll put Morrissey right up there with them. And then I think it's possible that we see Hedman in that group too, just because people like voting for him. But I don't think it's necessarily because of performance. I think if he shows up, you know, in the top five, let's say, for this season, it's rep based more than anything. I love Noah Dobson.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Like, I love the season that dude's having. So I'll put, you know what, here, the next tier will be Bouchard, Morrissey, and Dobson.
Yeah. I like
kind of separating those guys. And then after them, we can go Hedman and McAvoy.
I feel like after that, it's like Hedman, Fox, McAvoy. They're like perennial.
The reputation tier.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Perennial vote getters. Like, no one's going to be mad at you if those guys end up on your ballot. But also, like, realistically, like, this isn't the year for any of them.
And then Darlene Hronek, kind of bringing up the last tier.
Yeah, there. That's like thanks for coming. Maybe congratulations, you guys round up the top 10.
Yeah,
you know,
it's nice to be nominated.
See it down the road a little bit. Yeah, maybe you come back next year or the year after and rack up some more.
The Jennifer Lawrence, if I don't win, I'm leaving tier. all right. I want to pivot off Dobson, right? Because if there was one guy I could see making a charge late, right? Mm-hmm. It's like if the Patrick Waugh effect works, right, if that team starts to play better 5-on-5 hockey, combines that with their lethal power play and the fact that they employ Ilya Sorokin and most people don't, and and sort of, you know, charges hard in that Metro division, I mean, I could see there being some narrative heft to his case, you know, that 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 captures the imagination of certainly, you know, the Eastern voters who still fall asleep before Quinn Hughes plays most nights. And
leave me out of that, please.
I will. I'm just, I'm just throwing a little bit of red meat. It's fine. The Patrick Waugh effect, though, right? What are your thoughts on his return to the NHL? What do you expect from him his second go-around?
I thought his presser when he got the job was really interesting, where he was like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, I left Colorado and thought the next job was going to come immediately, and it didn't. So it sort of like forced him, I think, maybe do some, you know, about as much inward, you know, looking inward as you're going to get from Patrick Waugh. So I think in the best case scenario, you know, he comes back, he's a little bit less bombastic, he focuses more on coaching, he's dealing with Lou, so you know you're not going to have, there's no sense in turning it into a battle with the front office like he had in Colorado, because you're always going to lose. Like, no one, I don't care if he's 80 or 90 or 120, like, you fight Lou in a battle of the wills, like, it's not going to go your way. So I think if he's accepting that and just is like, I'm gonna coach this team and, you know, focus on that, I think it could work. Like we saw it happen in Colorado too. You know, he might not have a long shelf life just because of his personality type, but as a guy who comes in and is just like, you know, to energize stuff and get stuff moving in the right direction, I think you can do a lot worse. And also, that division stinks right now. There is a space there for somebody to step up and take control of a wild card space in that division, because nobody's playing all that well. Like, Pittsburgh's falling off. The Caps are, I don't think anybody really believes in them. The Devils have, you know, all sorts of issues up and down that lineup. And I think it's possible if the Islanders get it together and play hockey the way, you know, look more like the team that we've seen, you know, up until this season with their defensive structure and whatever else. I don't think it's impossible. I think there's a space that they can move into for sure.
Speaking of that division, and you mentioned Pittsburgh and, you know, how inconsistent they've been this year, and they're right in the mix there with the Islanders and the Capitals, kind of just above 500. If they go on a run, they can definitely make the playoffs, but they haven't been able to yet. And look, obviously the name Jake Guentzel has been a big topic of conversation out here, as we think the Canucks are probably going to be aggressive at the deadline. I still can't quite wrap my head around the Penguins selling a player like Jake Guentzel when they still have Sidney Crosby playing like he's playing on this team that does have a chance to make the playoffs. But do you think there is a realistic possibility that since he's a pending UFA, he does move before the deadline?
I do, because this has been true, I think, of Guentzel really for the last couple of years. Because he's phenomenal. Like I'm a Jake Guentzel guy. I think in a lot of regards, partially because he's an American, of course. And there aren't too many buttons to push for that roster. And this has been true of the last. I know they went out and got Carlson. You know, so you know, that's a serious addition to make, but like, it's tough to make that team better, and it's tough to make them younger, and it's tough to do anything other than lean into the skid of them all being 35, 36, 37 years old. And one of the only things to do, and this has gone back for a couple years, even to when Ron Hextall was running the show, was like, the easiest way to try to hit some sort of soft rebuild is to move Guentzel. Like that's almost the only realistic way you're going to get futures, because everybody else is either immovable or you know, has no trade protections, whatever. There aren't a lot of dudes that they have to trade that would net them any kind of meaningful return. And Guentzel's kind of the only one, but man, it's really, it's at the same time, that being said, it's really, really hard for me to imagine, unless they go out and lose, you know, get 1 point in their next six games or something. It's tough for me to imagine them doing that, even though it's a fascinating thought. And I get why you guys specifically are asking
yes.
about it, because you know, he makes plenty of sense in a lot of different ways. But I just don't, it's tough to imagine them being there yet.
We've spent more time talking Jake Guentzel in the last month than we have like players on the Canucks on this show, because it's been such a topic of conversation out here. Gentile, man, always great. Thanks for doing this.
Before we let you go, nope. man, he's the only guest yeah. we could possibly talk to Kayshawn Boutte about. Okay.
8,900 individual bets.
Well, 130K staked over the course of it. Now,
LSU football, man.
I love
it. Different. They have different dudes in that program.
I'm excited to hear Brian Kelly address this in a Cajun accent.
Well, so I love SEC football. Love SEC football, Gentile, and I love to wager on football. And the moment I saw this news, I went and checked my spreadsheet where I track my bets to see if I lost on any of the Boutte wagers, right? See if I could get it one of my online apps and get like a $25 bet credit.
Against Kayshawn Boutte. Yeah.
No, dude, I want like a $25 bet credit to ladder three pointers tonight. Anyway, I went and checked, and I had lost money on some Boutte wagers, but he bet his overs, as did I, in those games. What's your take on a player betting their overs, given that effectively that's what they're doing every day of their career anyway?
Oh, man, I love it as Kayshawn Boutte specifically. He's always been in and out. I weirdly have a lot of connections to the LSU program, and Boutte's, you know, he's a wild boy to begin with, so it's so funny. Like, of course, he's gonna bet on himself. Like, it's completely in step with stuff I've heard about him over the years. Yeah, it's always better than the alternative. I'll say that much, because that's when the questions start to get really scary and really ugly.
Good stuff, man. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk again soon.
All right, boys.
Yeah, thanks for putting up with our nonsense, bud.
That is Sean Gentile from The Athletic joining us here. I'm glad you did ask him about the Kayshawn Boutte story.
Totally.
It's very, very funny.
Rick Tocchet, by the way, today following practice says he's surprised about, this is per Jeff Patterson, CanucksArmy.com, says he's surprised how his comments about Patterson last night have been portrayed as coach blasts star player. Said he gave honest answer to a couple questions, says he doesn't want to, but may have to be guarded with his answers now. Rick Tocchet not angry at the media, just disappointed. We'll get into that on the other side.
Yeah, we'll get into it. There's some quotes from Elias Pettersson on it as well. So we'll talk about that. We might even get the audio in so we can hear it direct from Rick Tocchet. Hopefully we do before the end of the show. Keep sending your texts in. Final segment here coming up on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. So we'll see if we get some Rick Tocchet audio here in the next few minutes. I would expect that we do. Hopefully Batch is on top of that. Come on, Batch. Batch is always on top of that. So we'll get it in here momentarily, hopefully before the end of the show.
You got a question that I like, that I figure let's go into the inbox, because we've got some good texts. First of all, we've got people saying that I shouldn't disrespect the San Francisco Dons.
We actually got a couple of Gonzaga-related Texan, which surprised me. But they're the official college basketball program of the Northwest.
Yeah.
Pacific Northwest.
Don't disrespect those San Francisco Dons, Drancer. Two more wins than Gonzaga this year and consistently atop the WCC with the Jags. They lost to St. Mary's by 17 weekend.
Let's not get too deep into the weeds on the WCC
Just saying. We got some good
You got thoughts
rolled.
On their pick and roll coverage?
I liked the text. You got a question in.
All right.
And it was, can you build a tiered list of skaters that would help you in a playoff matchup against McDavid Dreisaitl? You can use any players, past or present, but you can only add one player to the existing Canucks roster.
So any player from history.
Well, let's go Canucks history.
Oh, okay. Canucks history. Okay. I mean, do you go Kessler?
I think you go Kessler.
You probably have to.
I was just thinking, I think you go Kessler.
Best defensive forward the team's ever had?
I think so.
Yeah, in his prime. I mean, only Selke winner they've had.
Yep.
He was a beast.
Right-handed, wins a ton of draws.
I think
fast,
you probably have
too,
to go
like
Kessler.
Really fast.
Yeah.
Really fast, really annoying. To everybody, his teammates included.
Yeah.
What?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would have to be Kessler. Didn't Kessler play against McDavid with the Ducks, right?
Right.
Now, that was like not this version of McDavid yet, but still really good.
Yep.
Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, Kessler also was such a monster in the playoffs.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I think you go Kessler 1. I think you go Luongo 2.
Ooh, I like that.
And then,
although the thing is, with Kessler, it's additive, right? Because you're bumping out like your 12th forward. With Luongo, you're bumping out Demko. You know what I mean? So is the marginal upgrade worth it?
Luongo ahead of, I mean, it's still Luongo, man.
Yeah, he's still really good, but so is Demko. Thatcher Demko's really good.
Incredible, but like, you know, there's still some distance that Demko has to travel.
That's true.
To get to that level, right? We all know that.
Rager texts in either Ham Hughes or Matthias Olland. And I mean, look, great defensive defenseman. I like that.
I like the prime Pavel Bure suggestion.
I like that people are just like, just bring your own, clone your own McDavid. Just have your own. Forget trying to shut him down. Just add a wicked offensive player. I like that.
This is also a really good suggestion. Esa Tiikkanen is a quietly good suggestion. Esa Tiikkanen famously.
Well, so is it Vancouver Tiikkanen or
no,
like
you want,
any point in his career?
You want Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Esa Tiikkanen.
Yeah.
Esa Tiikkanen, man.
Because if it's any point in their career, Mark Messier.
Oh, no. Just leave.
I'm just saying, if we're opening it up like that.
No, but Esa Tiikkanen, in terms of the work that he did when he was a member of the Jets shutting down Bure, that's like as good as it gets for a defensive forward. Esa Tiikkanen, by the way, moonlighted when I was in Florida as like a chaperone for groups of Finnish tourists who were traveling to Miami, right? Often it would be like you go see the Bulls and Markkanen in Miami. And then you'd come to the Panthers game, and he'd always like be, you know, texting Barkov, right? And Barkov and some of the Panthers Finnish players would meet with Esa Tiikkanen and these groups of Finnish fans that Tiikkanen would hang out with. And sometimes it would be like the Oilers, so there'd be like asks for Tiikkanen.
That's amazing.
And Esa Tiikkanen, a hilarious guy, like a lovely dude. And one day, he came into the like players hallway, like right outside the dry stall, just like walking around, and I hear a player walk by him and they're like, security, right? Which is like a classic player response for like guy where they're not supposed to be. So I come and I'm like, Esa, like you can't be here, you need a credential. And he holds up his fist and he's got 3 Stanley Cup rings on it, and he goes, I thought this was my credential. And I'm like, you know what, fair enough.
That's awesome. That's very, very good.
Honestly, Esa Tiikkanen, awesome guy.
What a character.
Awesome character.
And great defensive forward in his heyday. No doubt about that.
And lots of Stanley Cup rings.
Yeah, lots of Stanley Cup rings. All right. We do have the Rick Tocchet audio, and we read the quote about the Elias Pettersson commentary. So it's a big chunk of audio here. We'll have a few minutes to talk about it after we hear from Rick Tocchet. But here is Tocchet speaking after the Canucks practice today.
That was pretty good. It was pretty good. I thought some good energy. I like guys like Hoggy and those guys. You know, they drive practice. Almond, you know, Laffey, those guys were driving practice. You know, and I think that's important when you get those young guys enthusiastic, and I thought the practice picked up because of those guys.
Speaking of that line, what have you liked about it of late? What have they brought you in terms of consistency?
Real good, obviously, on the forecheck. You know, that's something that they've done really consistent, really well. You know, now maybe some face-offs in our own end. If we get Oms to win some face-offs, you know, get better. He's trying, and, you know, you can put that line out there more in face-offs, and that'll give him a couple more minutes. But, you know, they're probably one of our best forechecking lines right now.
Like some tweakings to the defensive pairings, what do you see in terms of Zadorov going with Juleson potentially?
Yeah, I think footy, you know, like a committee, you're just trying to get, you know, it might happen in a game, you know. So I think he's got to be ready for anything. You know, people get hurt, people get tired. So, you know, it's most of the time it's etched in stone, but not always.
What was a message to Zadorov today? It was some pre-practice chatter there. Kind of a rough night for him.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, it's sometimes as a coach you want to try to shake the team up. You know, I don't think he was that bad. You know, sometimes a player can come in and say, hey, man, like, you know, what happened? And sometimes a coach, you have a feel. It was more of a feel. He knows he has to be on the PK and the other one's got to be a little quicker. But, you know, I don't think it's a problem. I think he played really well against Toronto. You know, it's just sometimes it happens, you know. Some of our defense, they never played for 5-6 minutes at a time. It's not that big of a deal. But I like the fact that he likes to communicate, Z.
Talking to Brock this morning, it wasn't so much about the chances he had to score. He was more worried about his positional play and how much of that is a leap forward in the last year with Brock.
Yeah, I think he really, you know, he's going to really start to spend more time with our skills guy. He's watching a lot of video with Yosi now. I think it's the staple stuff that sometimes when you score and you get in those slumps, you forget about the other stuff. I think if he does like what he was saying, and, you know, he's knocking on the door, though, like he wants extra work. So that's good. That's a good thing.
Rick, you were asked questions about Elias last night, and you gave a pretty direct answer. And in a market like this one, that's sort of taken as the coach blasted, you know, one of his star players. I assume whatever you say to us in the media, you would say to the players. And, like, I mean, where's the level of communication in that regard in terms of criticizing
players? Well, I didn't think he skated last night, so if the article I blasted him, I mean, that's you guys. I mean, but what do you want him to say? I mean, you guys are taking it to a... If Hoggy has a couple of bad games, I say it, but it's not in the paper. Like, Pete's a big man. You know, he had a tough night skating-wise. I thought, it's over with. You know, he played 21 minutes. He's not on the end of the bench, so we're taking this to a different level. Like, yeah, it's different. I was on your side as a media guy, right, and I get it. But you guys got to analyze the game, too. You got to understand certain things, too. So it's not talking has a problem with Pedersen. It's you ask me a question, who was good, who was bad. So I got to be careful because if you guys are going to ask me questions now, a player, I'm going to say no comment. I'll let you guys analyze it. So you guys got to be careful. That's not a big deal. He's out there smiling. It's not a big deal. So maybe it's a story that we're winning a lot and we're looking for negativity. That's the way I look at it. Not to blast you guys. It's just frustrating because it's you know, over the internet talking blast at Pedersen. So I don't know how I blasted him. I just said he had a tough night.
Do you think there's a fatigue factor? I mean, when we go back to the road trip, he was lighting it up. I mean,
some guys go through stretches.
Yeah.
Whether you're a good player or not, and sometimes you got to be reminded, hey, you got to skate, you got to manage the puck. You know, you got to get some good angles. I don't care who you are. You know, and you know, you're looking for consistency, and he's a consistent guy, and that's it. Go to work. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Your power move over the last 20 games, I think it's running at like 89%, which would pro-rated to be the best in the league.
PK?
Yeah,
PK.
Oh, pardon me, PK.
Yeah, yeah.
What's been the biggest reason for success, big picture-wise, in the last 20 games?
I think Mike Yost's done a great job, the structure part, like teaching what we're the principles of it. And I think we're getting good groupings, you know, Teddy and Dakota, and then you got Alms, and then you got the Suits. And I think Petey's done a good job with McKayev. He's getting more PK time. And then Millsy when we need some big draws. So we got a good group right there. I think Ian Cole he's always been a good PK guy, and I think he's a smart guy out there. So I think it's just a lot of confidence. Now we just got to work on our clears. I think we get better at our clears, we're going to really take off even more. That's probably the one thing we're a little bit on the average side is.
What's the one thing you stress in the GP when you go up against the team? And you know, you look at the opposition, what do you stress in terms
for power plays?
For penalty kill. What's your game plan? Like, what do you really focus and stress on with that unit?
Well, it's different. You play Edmonton, they're everywhere. So you play maybe a tighter diamond with some tweaks. Some other teams use a spread, so you got to play a little bit different. So you get the game plan on the certain power play and the certain, you know, you're playing Colorado. They got a lot of low plays, so you got to make sure you're really tight down low. And you might have to give up a weak side shot, but at least Demmer knows it's going to be this shot. He has a chance. PKs, when you give the back doors, I think we had one last night, right? Those are tough for the goalies. So we try not to give those back doors, even on 5-on-5.
Is that a challenge sometimes? And what I mean by that is, like, you want to tweak it to who you're playing, yet at the same time you want to stay within the structure
right.
of what you do with your PK.
Yeah, I think PK, too, is structure, but it's also a feel, too. You know, like, yeah, we want this guy to be in this position, but if you feel you can pressure a guy and another guy wants to pressure, you got to allow that. You know, you can't be too structured in PK. So we try to allow a little bit of freedom where, hey, I think I can go get that puck. I might be out of structure, but I think I can win that race. We allow that. I think that helps.
Rick, I was looking at something on Roenick, who has even better. I think when the trade was made last year, the management made a big deal that this was a really good player, but maybe the people here didn't know much about him. Where has he impressed you this year?
Well, he's just a good skater. He can skate himself out of trouble in the forechecks. Obviously, he's a good slinger. He slings that puck to Huggy a lot, which is, you know, I'm a big righty lefty if he can. But when teams play aggressive, when he can sling it over to Huggy, gives Huggy a little more time to do his thing, right? So, and his shot. I think he's, you know, that's one thing he's trying to work on, his shot. I think sometimes, it gets a little bit high and wide sometimes, so he's got to work. If he can just manage his shot a little bit, and that's the only kind of not tweak that I have, I think that's one thing he can get better at, is his shot.
Have you toyed, I mean, when he's on the power play a couple of times earlier this year, have you thought about it? That's one thing, you don't necessarily have as a big bomb shot back there, and have you thought about that much?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if I do play the two-up, maybe, you know, but Huggy's so good up top that actually it's probably, you know, feels better probably for himself, not better than Huggy, but at the top where he can use that shot. We have to experiment with that, sure.
Is the break coming at the right time? I mean, you try to elicit that 60-minute effort, yet the guys know what's around the corner. Is it a good time for coming up?
Yeah, for this team, yeah. I think it's, you know, that's why the other day I told the guys, whoever wanted to come down to the rink, just come down. I think sometimes too much video, too much talking, too much analyzing makes people stale. And, you know, whether a guy struggles or not, he knows he struggles sometimes, you know, he needs to kind of figure it out himself. So I think this is the right time. I guess every coach I've talked to a couple of buddies in the league, they want a break too.
Yeah.
Coaches want breaks from players. Yeah. I've heard that from a couple of coaches.
We talked so much about systems, but just managing day-to-day expectations and rest versus recovery, it's something you've probably had to take to another level with.
Yeah, I mean, there's some science to it. Yeah. But there's also, you know, we've raised the bar here, so we're in a microscope even more. So sometimes we got to be careful ourselves that, you know, we got to analyze it a little bit differently now. But we have to keep the same standard. You know, we expect a 60-minute effort, and we don't get it. Sometimes we get frustrated, players or coaches. So we got to be careful how we approach it now too.
What level of satisfaction do you have though at this point? I mean, you're going to have those nights where it's not there, but overall, I mean.
Well, for me, it's the resiliency. I mean, I don't know what our record the last 12 was. It a 9-0 and so what, and we haven't lost very much around here. And so, you got to manage that sort of stuff too. So I think the resiliency. But to get the next level, you can't throw 3-4 games out of 6 where you're not getting 60 minutes. So that's the next elite level, and that's what we're striving for.
Rick, where are you with Mikheyev's game right now? Obviously no goals for quite a while, but he had the chance in the third period.
Yeah.
He drew the penalty as well. I mean, he left a mark on the game last night, but obviously where he's playing in your lineup, you probably need some offense from him.
Yeah, I believe in Mick. I think he's a fast skater, but he's got to put himself in positions to play fast. And I think, you know, him and Kuzi sometimes have it tough. They're not together. They're too spread apart. If you look at the other lines, whoever has the puck, the other guy's always close. You know, if Garland has it, Teddy Bluger's around. If Millsy has the puck, you know, you see, you know, Suter last night, they're close. That's why. And I think those guys play a little wide. And then when somebody gets it, they don't have speed. Mick needs to be close to a guy with speed. And when he doesn't, it looks like he's skating backwards or standing around a lot. So, you know, that's the concept with that line, is to make them stay close together. You know, it's instead of wide, play wide hockey. So, he knows he has to pick it up. You know, he's got to he's our speed guy. You know, he's got to chase pucks down. You know, he's got to be, you know, like Hoggy. Hoggy chases pucks down. So I'd like to see Mick do the same. But he's got to, I don't think he doesn't want to. I think he doesn't put himself in position sometimes. Like, instead of, you know, slashing across, it's somehow he goes a little bit wider. And I think it's just a mental thing for him.
For all your success this year, I think you guys have just a 2-5 record after 60 minutes. I think that's just a small sample size. Or is there something that's overtime that's not going right?
Well, I don't know. Phil had, you know, Phil Hronek had that kind of breakaway going in. We make a mistake, it's in our net. Like, it's happened a couple of times in our overtime. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, you expect to be, you know, what is it, 5-2, because we have some people that can score. You know, management of the puck hasn't been as great this year. You know, some loose, you know, I think there's certain times when you have the puck, you cannot lose it, because if you do, last night. And, you know, I don't blame Petey, too, because it's just not him management. Like, if Kuzi slashed across, Petey could have gave it to him. We would have had easy entry. So I think it was just a combination of not just those two guys. Sometimes we don't manage the puck well. And the guy that doesn't have the puck has to be available in certain areas. That's what I think.
I did coach 3-on-3 in the All-Star game.
Yeah, that's it. I'm just kind of a buzzer. Just go, you know. Yeah, it'll be fun. I don't know. They'll change on their own. They're not going to. I don't think they're going to listen to me, anyways.
A lot of regroups.
Yeah, a lot of regroups. Yeah.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking again at length to the media after today's practice. And, you know, really the most interesting part of it there is
the Pettersson
his kind of commentary on the commentary of his commentary about Elias Pettersson.
The question was put to him, like, you know, the coverage was star player or blasted by head coach, and he reacted pretty viscerally,
yes.
I'd say.
Yeah, no, there was genuine
to that framing.
Yeah.
But does he actually feel like that about the coverage, or did he feel like that based on how the question was framed? That sort of would be something I feel like I don't really have clarity to. I don't know. Did you see a lot of coach blasts player coverage?
No, I think people talked about it, but I think people talked about it in the same way we've talked about, or in a very similar way.
We debated whether it was mild or frank.
Yeah.
But either way, we weren't...
It wasn't... We both agreed. Like, it wasn't harsh. It wasn't severe.
No, definitely
It wasn't
not.
Like, wow, he's really angry at Pettersson.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And I think that's generally how I've seen it talked about, very much in line with... And, you know, Talkie had the reference as well. Look, like, if Nils Höglander has a bad game, I'll say it. If he has a couple bad games. And we talk about that, right? We talk about, okay, what did the coach have to say about Nils Höglander?
But it's not a
what
big news
mean?
Story.
No, but, like... It's
I thought
obviously,
that was his point.
Yeah, it's obviously bigger with Pettersson, but I think the conversation has been pretty similar. Like, okay, the coach had this piece of criticism to offer about a player. Let's dig into it. I didn't see a lot of overreaction.
No, me neither.
Now, I do think everything is magnified when it's one of your best players, when there is the uncertainty around Pettersson and his future with the team, right? I think all of that is going to generate more takes, more interest, more emotion.
More wagging tongues.
For sure. But I don't think I didn't see anyone sounding the alarm, right? Like, oh, wow, Tocchet really laid into Pettersson. I didn't see that reaction anywhere.
No, I didn't either. The thing that I liked is, like, you know, I read that comment on Twitter and I'm like, oh, man, like, Tocchet's willingness to engage and talk specifics. You know what I mean?
We can't lose that.
We can't lose that because it's not that the thing that was interesting, right, wasn't that Tocchet had some commentary about Pettersson being off, not just last night, but maybe for a week. But it was, you know, we want him to play faster, which
mm-hmm,
matches
mm-hmm.
something that he's been talking about more generally in terms of what the club needs from Pettersson, right? And I think dovetails pretty interestingly with this idea of, like, North-South hockey. And, you know, we want those details because it helps us understand and report
yep.
on the team in a better way, right? So... I definitely don't want to lose that. And then he's asked about Mikheyev and Mikheyev's recent struggles, and he goes into it
yes.
in depth. I'm like, okay, I'm not worried.
Yeah. I don't know if there's another mode for him to talk about hockey,
no.
right? Like, he's going to tell you what he sees. He's going to be specific about it. And it's not, you know,
and
this
he's
is,
going to be open to helping to educate you. And
this,
I think that's,
and
I think that plays really well in this market. Sorry.
It does. No, you're right. Because I was going to say, this isn't just like the media wanting good quotes to build stories around
no.
from Tocchet, right? We've seen from people texting in and talking to us about it, how much the fans and our listeners certainly, and I think in general fans here, appreciate the clarity and the directness and the honesty from Rick Tocchet and the willingness to educate and teach. Okay, here, I'm not just going to say generally there are little things that the players, I'm not taking a shot at Travis Green, but you know what I mean, that there are you know things that player X needs to do to be better. I'm going to tell you exactly what and why I think it's important, right? I think that has tremendous value, and you don't want to think about it in terms of like, you know, building support in the market or whatever. You know, he's not a politician, but it does matter. That ability to communicate in a hockey mad market like Vancouver and have fans understand what you're saying, it's been a huge, huge asset for Rick Tocchet here. And I agree with you. I don't think we're going to lose that because he's so good at it. But I was a little worried as well.
Yeah.
Like, no, well, I apologize.
And he's not a politician, but there is a political nature. He's not a politician, but he's a spokesperson, you know? And the way coaches watch video, the way coaches watch the game, they get so much more detail than certainly someone like you or I can. And that's fine. Like, that's okay. To get that information out in a market that cares so deeply about this game, it's all upside. It's all upside for all involved.
Okay, before we end the show, I have to pass this along.
Okay.
We haven't talked about Gavin McKenna much, if at all, on the show.
Well, when are we going to start talking Tej Aginla?
Yeah, that's true. But Cam Robinson, of course, from Elite Prospects, passes this note along on Twitter. Gavin McKenna, 2026 draft, so this is draft minus 2 year, has produced at a 1.44 point per game pace this season. Mario Lemieux was at 1.5 in his draft minus 2 year in the queue.
Better
the
pick
80s.
It up, Gavin.
So there you go. There's the historical comp for my
incredible
guy, Gavin
incredible
McKenna
stuff.
Right now. We'll sign off on that note. Back with the Friday edition of the show tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.